16th.
Okay, you're on.
All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Culk. We're meeting the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It is Wednesday, June 19th, approximately 10 a.m. for our regularly scheduled commission meeting. I just have a couple opening comments, the first being myself and Commissioner Crisman, as well as Mr. Diller and John Hamry, went down to the MARC conference, the Midwest Regulator Conference, where we had a good chance to, and MDU was also down there and others, Ottertail. We had a good chance to visit with regulators in our region, but also we got to hear from the esteemed Honorable FERC Commissioner Tony Clark. It was very good. Tony was the keynote speaker on, I believe that was Monday morning, Tony spoke. And it was very interesting to hear from Tony because he's been in the FERC now just over a year. And it's interesting, in his year up there, he's made some, I guess, say, critical decisions dealing with some of the things that affect North Dakota, such as transmission planning and cost allocation. And he's been the dissenting vote on many of these because he understands that how important it is to have states' rights ahead of national rights on transmission planning. It was very interesting to hear Tony's thoughts about that and what's going to happen now because Commissioner Norris in the FERC is Wellinghoff is no longer the FERC chair. So they're waiting to see who the next chair of the FERC is going to be. Tony assured me it would not be him at this time. But there will be someone appointed as FERC chair. There's many things that are coming back up in some of the rehearing of the cases that will directly affect North Dakota. And now that Tony has been on the commission over a year, he no longer has to not be involved in things that directly affect North Dakota. So it'll be very interesting to see how this next year plays out. And it was good to see Tony. It was a good conference. And I'll have some more thoughts at the end of it. But that's all that I would have. Commissioner Crisman or...
Well, just to add to your comments about the MARC meeting, I thought it was very useful. It's the first MARC or NARUC meeting that I've attended, and I did find it useful. I'm also looking at our agenda, and maybe it got long because we weren't around last week and couldn't have any special meetings. But, you know, if, to someone who is not familiar with the workings of the commission that is listening in or watching today, I think they would really get a feel for what we do at the commission, because there's just about every subject we deal with seems to be somewhere on our agenda today, so should be an interesting day.
Thank you, Randy. Commissioner Dvorak?
Maybe that explains why I like Austin. I asked Austin if he's running all over the place. He said no. He's our intern. I've been sitting at my desk, but my brain is everywhere. I feel a little bit that way myself, Austin. Anyway, I held down the fort while these two esteemed commissioners were at MARC, and one of the important things that happened while they were absent is one of them got another year older. So I haven't yet wished my fellow Commissioner Randy a happy birthday, but happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday,
Randy. Hope you enjoyed your celebration over the weekend, your two-day celebration. Being straddling two dates makes for a long birthday.
It used to be more fun having two birthdays than it is now.
So your Randy years are 2 years, not like cats. Right. Dog years, 7 years, Randy's.
Something like that. So no, I don't want to start doubling here now.
I knew you were wise, Randy, but and then yesterday I was out at the Berthold Farmers Elevator for a tour of that elevator, met with our licensing folks, and they kind of showed me how they do their work, what they look at. I went up to the top of the elevator, looked down inside, was glad I didn't have my phone and drop it in, which one of them have done before. and then from the view up there, got a sense of some of the diversification that is occurring in the western North Dakota as a result of our energy growth. The Berthold Elevator has a new line of business, and they fill the oil tankers for Enbridge at the Enbridge Oil Facility, which you can see right across the way from there, from the top of their elevator. And it's really been a positive for this elevator. It's almost half their business. And it's neat to see the marriage of energy and agriculture and the partnerships that are forming out there and the innovative approaches that companies like the Berthold Farmers Elevator have taken and reaching out to Enbridge and offering to provide the staffing to fill all the rail cars, which they fill 5 train loads a day at that facility, and they're hoping to expand to 7 No, five a week, hoping to expand to 7 to 8 a week at that facility. And they run 24/7, and it's really quite a sight to see the big long trains that we see. Just, you know, they inch their way through. They can fill 14 at a time, I believe, and then they pull it up and fill the next section. And it takes, I think, like 8 hours to fill an entire train. And Enbridge has a pipe that leads to a tank on that across the field on that site, and that tank is kept. They try to keep it full all the time, and then they siphon off that oil over to the rail, and there it goes. So it's quite an operation and a huge investment. So it was interesting to see. That's all my opening comments.
All right, thank you, Julie. All right, with that, we have some items on consent. I would move passage.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Okay, we'll get into the regular agenda items. Item BK1. I move the commission deem the application complete, conditioned on receiving final turbine locations 1 week prior to hearing, and issue a notice of filing and notice of hearing in the application of Thunder Spirit Wind, LLC, for a certificate of site compatibility to construct a proposed 150-megawatt Thunder Spirit Wind Energy Project in Adams County, North Dakota, case number PU-11-601.
Second.
The Thunder Spirit filed their amended application June of this year for a certificate of site compatibility to authorize up to 150 megawatts of total wind energy generation. They're going to use up to 3 megawatts turbines, so we'll have to wait and see till the hearing exactly if they use 1.5 or 3 megawatts, but the max capacity will be 150 megawatts. We'll be setting a hearing later on in this agenda item, sometime early August, we're hoping for. It'll be in the Adams County Courthouse. A little more background, like I said, 150 megawatts, up to 75 turbines. The estimated cost, $300 million. The project to be located northeast of Hettinger, approximately 6 miles. Their original letter said they were hoping to have construction completed by December 31st of 2012, which is no longer possible. Of course, this is an amended application, but I would guess with the production tax credit, they hope to have things started by, of course, December 31st of this year. Nothing is particularly out of the ordinary in this project other than it'll be interesting to see if they're actually able to construct this project, because they've had an application in front of us before that they didn't get quite worked out, but we're hopeful that they can get this taken care of and get all the turbine locations to us before the hearing, and so we can then make a decision on it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission's damage prevention enforcement action concerning Kindred Plumbing and Heating, case number PU-12-303.
Second.
Kindred Plumbing and Heating is a North Dakota corporation based out of Kindred, North Dakota. An Otter Tail Power Company is a wholly owned subsidiary located in Fergus Falls, Minnesota. On Friday, June 8th of 2012, so this is some time ago, the Otter Tail employee came upon an area that they were going to do a locate on that had already been excavated. During that time, they then filed a complaint with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. Our advocacy staff went out, looked at it, and sure enough, there was the work was done prior to the company doing the locate. And so basically through a series of events over the last year or so, Kindred has agreed to this consent order that they, in fact, did do the digging before the locate mm-hmm. was taking place. This is actually the second time that this company has been in front of us. So in this case, the Kindred Plumbing and Heating agrees to pay a fine of $1,500 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission at the completion of this order. There was no one was hurt. There was no damages. But this was clearly a case where the company was out there digging before the locate had taken place.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thanks again, Darrell. Item BK3. I move the commission find the May 10th, 2013 complaint filed by the North Dakota Public Service Commission advocacy staff states a prima facie case, serve the complaint on the respondent, S.J. Lewis Corporation, Inc., and issue a notice of hearing in case number PU-12-799.
Second.
In May of this year, the PSC advocacy staff filed a formal complaint alleging violations of North Dakota One Call, and that the commission find S.J. Lewis Construction responsible for violating the One Call law and impose a penalty of $1,000. The public hearing for this matter will be scheduled later today, but we're looking at the September time frame, and it'll take place right here in the commission hearing room. A little background on this case. Actually, last week we had an order that fined S.J. Lewis $1,000 for a damage to sewer system that they'd done in the partial area. This particular case is dealing with the same company as S.J. Lewis. The complaint was filed by Reservation Telephone. In this area is in the Watford City region. Basically the same type of complaint where the company was installing the sewer system. They cut some of RTC's infrastructure. The cost in this case is $10,000, and the company has not agreed to a settlement agreement. The Reservation Telephone has not agreed and will not, you know, withdraw their complaint, so this is going to go to a hearing. So this will be the first time that I recall that we've actually done a hearing on one of these, and so I look forward to the hearing and hearing both sides of the case. This is the third time S.J. Lewis will be in front of the commission, and I would just make a note that in the initial discussion, advocacy staff recommended a $1,000 fine. As we get into the case itself, I think that is a noted recommendation, but that note recommendation will probably have varying amount of weight as we actually get into the hearing. So I look forward to a good hearing on this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Item BK4. I move the commission issue a notice of filing and notice of intervention deadline concerning Northern State Power Company's application for advanced determination of prudence to add three natural gas-fired combustion turbine generators to its systems, case number PU13194, and Northern State Power Company's application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to the two natural gas-fired combustion turbines to be constructed near Hankinson, North Dakota, case number PU13-195.
Second.
In April of this year, NSP filed an application for advanced determination and prudence for its proposal to add three 215-megawatt natural gas simple-cycle combustion turbines to its system, one to be located in the Xcel Energy Black Dog Generation Plant near Burnsville, Minnesota, and the two future ones to be located near Hankinson to be called Red River Valley Units 1 and 2. This motion today sets the deadline for intervention, which will be August 6th of 2013. Any company, any individual wishing to formally intervene needs to let the commission know prior to this date, and then they'll have different status, if you will, as an intervener, having access to all the information all the way through the discussion. But that does not mean that anyone that wants to come is not able to at the hearing. So the intervention deadline is really sets the stage for who's going to be involved and all the discussion takes place back and forth. But nevertheless, it is a very key date because I anticipate this will be a very good case because it'll be a ADP case that's in front of the commission right now. Eventually, I'm sure it'll come back in a rate case. Deals with multi-jurisdictions with different states, of course, Minnesota, North Dakota. In this particular case, we had a meeting last week where our advocacy staff is going to, I won't say for the first time, maybe it is. Mike, is it the first time we've intervened in another jurisdiction? This is the first time that the advocacy staff is actually going to request intervention in Minnesota's proceedings and to talk to make sure about North Dakota ratepayers are protected and I assume share some of their concerns. It's not actually the North Dakota Commission weighing in. It's the advocacy staff of this ADP procedure that is going to be weighing in. So it's a slight difference, but it is important because as Minnesota policies tend to, I would say, drift away from what I would consider good policies to keep the cost of electricity down as they have a 1% solar mandate and different types of things. I think it's important that our advocacy staff gets over there and shares the concerns that North Dakota ratepayers might have. So all this tied into the intervention deadline is August 6th of this year.
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion?
I would also add to that that Xcel Energy is North Dakota's largest utility provider. And so while we sometimes hear that their decisions, they weigh what Minnesota thinks the most heavy on their decisions because they are based in Minneapolis and that's where a large portion of their work is, they're our largest utility provider. So I think it's noteworthy that the advocacy staff is intervening and expressing North Dakota's concerns to them in Minnesota. It's appropriate. They need to know that we Xcel Energy matters a lot in our state, and so I am pleased that advocacy is going to do that. This, if they build in North Dakota, this would be their first facility in our state, which is also noteworthy, a first-generation facility, I should say. And this project is also interesting because it sets up a several-stage process. The first stage would be a facility constructed in Minnesota. And, you know, we need to weigh in on that as well, and that'll weigh heavily on our consideration on the ADP, et cetera, in terms of the timing of which and where things should be built first and really focusing in on how we secure a generation facility in North Dakota and what that means and how that can affect reliability and other important issues to us. So that's all for me.
No, exactly. Julie laid it out beautifully. I'm excited that Xcel is looking at some good baseload generation in North Dakota, if you will. But we just have the concerns to make sure that we always get North Dakota ratepayers covered as they continue to figure out what generation they're going to use to meet the needs of the future to keep all the state's jurisdictions happy.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK5, I move the Commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing concerning Boomerang Wireless LLC's application to be designated as a eligible carrier for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for Lifeline Services, case number PU13-203.
Second.
In May of this year, Boomerang Wireless, an Iowa limited liability company with its principal offices in Hiawatha, Iowa, filed an application for designation as an ETC for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income customers. There will be three items to be considered. Is the applicant qualified under current telecom law? What ETC universal service support area should be designated? And is this application in the public interest? Comments and requests for hearing must be received by close of business July 31st, 2013. If deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine this matter without a formal hearing. I would just add in there that these ETCs, we're starting to see a lot of them coming forward, and this order today sets the stage that anyone requesting a formal hearing has a certain time, just July 31st, to do so. But that doesn't mean that any member of the Commission cannot request a formal hearing. So we've done that before where even though someone from the public may not want a formal hearing, we may have a commissioner that wants a formal hearing. And we have at least one of these cases that's already in front of us with Telrite that it's kind of hung up, if you will, in some of our work sessions about some of the concerns that the Commission has on making sure that the fund is managed properly. There's been some open source reporting, if you will, about some dubious acts, I will say, with this type of thing. So I anticipate a lot more detailed questions as we get into these next few rounds of cases. So I know Commissioner Christman has been very vocal about that. He might have some thoughts on it. But in this case, this sets the stage that anyone wishing to have a hearing from the public has till July 31st of this year to do so.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell. That concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. RC1, I move the Commission execute a contract with Northeast Technical Services in the amount of $25,400 for material testing at the 2013 Scranton-Bowman abandoned mine land project in Adams and Bowman counties.
Second.
In February, the AML division issued an invitation for bids for material testing and other services at the Scranton-Bowman project. The main project involves drilling and injection of pressurized grout. However, this part of the project is for the collection and lab testing of the grout samples. No bids were received by the April 22nd deadline, and the invitation for bids was reissued with a new deadline. Four bids were received. The low bid came from Northeast Technical Services of Virginia, Minnesota, in the amount of $25,400. The next lowest bid was just under $34,000. The staff estimate for the work was just under $28,000. A notice of intent to award a contract to Northeast Technical Services was issued on May 8th. None of the bidders appealed. The signed contract has been returned and properly executed performance and payment bonds, liability insurance documents, and other requested materials have been received.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
For agenda item RC2, I move the commission execute a contract with, again, Northeast Technical Services in the amount of $35,300 for material testing at the Beulah Zap Phase 14 abandoned mineland project in Mercer County.
Second.
In February, the AML division issued the invitation for material testing and other services at the 2013 Beulah Zap project. And I like to emphasize these. That's phase 14. It means exactly what it says. It's been a long process, and it'll continue to keep coming. The main project involves drilling and injection of pressurized grout. This part of the project is for the collection and lab testing of the samples. The bid opening occurred on April 22nd. In this case, two bids were received. The low bid was from Northeast Technical Services of Virginia, Minnesota, in the amount of $35,300. The other bid was for just over $38,000. The staff estimate for the work was just over $35,000. A notice of intent to award a contract to Northeast Technical Services was issued on April 24th. The other bidder did not appeal. The signed contract has been returned and properly executed performance and payment bonds, liability insurance documents, and other requested materials have been received.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just a comment I'd add, Darrell, is that it's interesting over the last several years we started seeing more bidders from outside the region on these projects, and I think overall that's been a good thing. It's brought down the cost in some of these. I think we have lower bids that are coming, but I also always share the concern that we've had in the past to make sure the companies coming from out of the area, they actually complete the work and they do all the things they're supposed to do. So we watch these very closely. We did learn some lessons, I think, a while back to make sure we do as thorough a screening as we can as these bids come in from companies that we traditionally haven't worked with.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Agenda item RC3, I move the commission execute a contract with Pleasant and Sons Construction Incorporated in the amount of $100,000 for filling sinkholes caused by abandoned underground coal mines in western North Dakota.
Second.
Before I go into the details of this, it's just worth noting, because it can seem very confusing. The previous two were typical bids that we're all used to dealing with, where you lay out a project that you want done and then look at the amount of the bid and choose the low bidder, assuming that the low bidder seems to be able to fulfill the requirements. In this case, it's sort of a different spin on bidding in that our abandoned mine land staff put together an amount that they were going to invest in filling sinkholes of $100,000, and companies bid on how much dirt they would fill for that amount of money, and it's based primarily on the amount of yards of dirt, but also they tend to submit a set amount for each site, because you know, if you just set up for a few yards, there's going to be additional cost. So as I go through the details, just keep that in mind. It's sort of a whole different bidding process on these sinkholes. But in February, the AML division did issue an invitation for bids for the sinkhole filling at numerous locations in western North Dakota, and it involves the excavation and then the filling of the sinkholes. The invitation for bids for this project set a maximum price of $100,000, as I mentioned. The low bidder was determined based on the contractor who submitted the lowest unit price on a cubic yard basis for earthen materials used to fill the sinkholes. Also, if all the sinkhole filling work is not completed this year, the project will be continued into 2014, since the contract will have an end date of December 31st of 2014. The public bid opening occurred on April 22nd, and four bids were received. The low bid was from Pleasant & Sons Construction of even farther away than Virginia, Minnesota. They are out of Greenville, Kentucky, and they bid $10 per cubic yard for 9,000 cubic yards of material, plus $10,000 for mobilizing equipment to 10 different sites with mine sinkholes, or $1,000 for each mobilization. The next lowest bid was for $13.33 per cubic yard for 6,000 cubic yards of material, plus $20,000 for 10 mobilizations. The AML division's estimate for fill material was $16 per cubic yard, plus $20,000 for the mobilization. So this is a lot more filling than we probably anticipated at the beginning getting done. A notice of intent to award a contract to Pleasant & Sons Construction was issued on April 24th. None of the other bidders appealed. The signed contract has been returned. There's liability insurance documents and other materials that were requested, and they have been received.
The motion and second. Is there further discussion?
Maybe just one more thought on that. It's also we have companies from outside the region that are applying for some of these projects, but also some of the traditional companies that did the work have found other projects to do in North Dakota. They're involved in a lot of the roads construction around the state, so we're seeing just a shift of just a lot of different people doing different things in the state.
On a lighter note with these, can't resist mentioning that every time we talk about the filling of these sinkholes, I can't help but think of our guys out there as big dentists stuffing all this filling material into a giant cavity in the earth, and this was a much bigger cavity than we expected. So hopefully there'll be no more toothaches after this.
Fair enough.
It's just the image that I've got in my brain.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Will that change our licensing going forward, I wonder, for the dental?
A little more training, maybe. 8 years.
Do we give the farmers some magazines to read until they...
Highlights magazine.
So they can get back out in the field safely again. Mr. Chairman, agenda item RC4. I move the commission approve renewal number 6 to surface coal mining permit number NACT-8203, held by the Coteau Properties Companies, to extend the permit term another 5 years until July 5th of 2018.
Second.
On March 4th of this year, Coteau Properties Company filed the application for renewal number 6 to this permit to continue to conduct mining operations within the existing permit area until 2018. This permit contains just over 1,155 acres of land located in Mercer County. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this five-year permit renewal application and respectfully recommends that it be approved. Coteau applied for this renewal since haul roads and topsoil and subsoil stockpiles and sedimentation ponds in this permit area are still being used to support current mining activities in other areas. The coal removal from this permit area was finished several years ago, but as I said, it's just primarily used to support the mining in nearby areas. Coteau Properties Company has submitted the affidavits of publication of the newspaper notices. We notified the appropriate agencies, affected landowners, and advisory committee members, received no objections to this renewal application, and evidence of adequate performance bond and liability insurance are currently on file. This and other permits, and I just want to emphasize this, because to me it's a stunning number. This and the other permits at the Freedom Mine, only that one mine, are covered by self and collateral bonds totaling $119 million. I just can't emphasize enough the importance of that backup plan that we have to make sure that if something happened to that mining company, we have something in place to make sure that that land is restored again. And we're assured that North Dakota's prairies are going to return to a good state for generations to come.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
The Commissioner Christman brought out the dollar amounts for the bond that the coal companies have in place. This year is going to be very interesting because some of the wind turbines in the state have been out there now in operation for 10 years. So the decommissioning plans need to be filed. The commission needs to look at if there needs to be bonding put in place for some of the wind turbines. So that'll be a discussion that we'll be having at a later date. But I think it's a very good point that we want to make sure the protection is there in case something would happen, and that would need to apply to wind farms and other facilities as well. So I don't believe the commission has ever set bonds for wind turbines yet, but it'll be a discussion that I'm sure we'll need to have at some point in time.
Further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And Mr. Chairman, that completes my portfolio.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Commission approve Montana Dakota Utility Company's 2012 Earnings Sharing Adjustment, case number PU-12-124.
Second.
This is an example of the long-term effects of negotiations that occurred during rate cases. This earnings sharing adjustment was born out of MDU's last electric rate case application in June of 2010, where the Commission agreed to share earnings above 10.75% equally with customers for the years of 2011 and 2012. That settlement was approved in June of 2011. Last year, MDU filed its 2011 earnings sharing agreement, and it was ordered, in 2012, they filed again, and in April of 2012, they filed their 2012 ESA, and in May, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing. No comments or requests have been received. So this is a decision before us. MDU's 2012 filing complies with the adjustments and decisions made in the Commission's 2011 order. It will result in the return of just about $16.50 over a two-month billing cycle for the average customer consuming 750 kilowatts per month. And that'll take place during July and August. The total amount that they're going to be returning is approximately $4 million. And I think this is an example. Randy and I weren't involved in this negotiation. Brian was. And it seems like an effective tool for the commission and the companies to use to make sure that the utility and its investors are allowed to earn a fair return on their investment while also keeping rates as low as possible for customers, keeping them fair and reasonable. And this agreement expires after this year, and we are working moving forward on a way to extend this agreement in the future, and we'll be considering that in coming months.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there further discussion?
I do have a question on it, and you know, maybe I'm not gleaning the answer as I read through this. July and August, is that just the months when it's going to be subtracted from the bills, or is that the months for which the bills are calculated, determine if it's an average customer, a large customer, a small customer?
That's when customers will see the credit on their bills, July and August.
It's calculated for the whole previous cycle.
It's already calculated.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But it is a good point because there's also the follow-through of some folks who have no longer are MDU customers, and there's things we put in the rate case to walk through some of those provisions. If I could, too, that Commissioner Fedorchak, I think, set it out perfectly, where in these rate cases, it's very challenging. The company needs to have some rate of return to make sure they can make the investments they need to have the reliability put into place. But there also has to be a collar in place that, you know, if the number is 10 and all of a sudden the company's making 20, that's way more than what was ever envisioned. So you put this collar in place to protect the ratepayers, and that's what is in place in this case, and we've done it with other rate cases. But what is significant, though, is Commissioner Fedorchak talked about it. This expires in the end of 2012. I would even go so far as to say that if we don't get this worked out before then, that I would probably ask them to come back for a rate case. So to me, with all the investment going on, there's so much out there. MDU is making more money than we would have envisioned, and they're investing a lot, too. But this is one of those things that I would highly encourage folks to make an agreement on this, or we could find ourselves in a rate case on this, because this is one of those, we've got to have this protection put into place, in my opinion.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the Commission adopt the order approving electric service area agreement and issue Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity number 5811 to Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resource Group, Inc., in the joint application of MDU Montana Dakota Utilities Company and Rough Rider Electric Cooperative for approval of an electric service area agreement to establish and designate service locations to be served by MDU and Rough Rider within and around the city of Dickinson, North Dakota, case numbers PU13-141 and PU13-142.
Second.
On March 29th of 2013, MDU and Rough Rider Electric filed a joint application for approval of a service area agreement to establish service areas and designate service locations in and around the city of Dickinson, and MDU further requested a certificate of public convenience and necessity authorizing it to serve these locations. On April 10th, we issued a notice of filing, a notice of informal hearing, a notice of opportunity for hearing, which provided until May 29th for receiving written comments or hearing requests. No response has been received. On May 22nd, the Commission discussed the issues with staff and applicants at an informal hearing. And the applicants contend that the agreement will avoid misunderstanding and disagreement over areas to be served by each party, accomplish the legislative intent to encourage harmony and operational efficiency among electric providers, promote safety, discourage unreasonable duplication of electric facilities, assure adequate and reliable electric service, and provide antitrust immunity to electric providers. Provide both parties with equitable participation in the provision of electric distribution service in areas within and around the city of Dickinson during the terms of the agreement. I read all that language because we all remember the days when this mechanism didn't exist for companies to reach this kind of agreement. This is extremely valuable and important for the citizens in the Dickinson area and in around that area to be able to be served efficiently, to reduce the duplication of infrastructure, and allow for efficient build-out of the infrastructure that we need. I did a little research on the growth in Dickinson, and it's pretty astounding. In 2009, Dickinson had 117 building permits for a total value of $43.9 million. That number in 2012 was, so in 2009, the total value of their building permits was $43.9 million. In 2012, it has $409 million. It's astounding level of growth. And all of these buildings need electric service. And so my hat's off to the two companies for working out this agreement and setting out these boundaries well in advance to allow for, you know, reasonable, responsible, efficient growth in that area.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I just want to further add to Commissioner Fedorchik's congratulating the companies on working together. 18 years in the Senate, some of the toughest days that I had down there were these TIA battles. And I think that we've entered an era where the utilities are putting the customers first and making decisions that emphasize making sure that those customers have dependable and affordable power instead of who can beat the other side in some kind of a battle. And I just think they should be commended, and it makes me know that our utility companies are one of the many reasons why North Dakota is booming and prospering.
Mm-hmm. I'll also add, because I received a little bit more information from Sean Castle, the city administrator there, that the building permits in Dickinson in 2011 were 137, and in 2012, 589. So
I hope they're calling before they dig.
Me too.
Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
My final item on the agenda today, I move the commission deem the amendment to the applications for a corridor certificate and route permit do not materially affect the applications and that a rehearing in case number PU-11-680 MDU Company's proposed 24-mile, 10-inch diameter natural gas pipeline in Morton County, North Dakota is not required.
Second.
On June 13th, MDU filed a request for an amendment to its application for a corridor certificate and route permit for this 24-mile, 10-inch diameter natural gas pipeline in Morton County. This is the pipeline that will serve its new gas-fired generation facility in next to the Heskett plant. As discussed at the May 3rd, 2013 hearing, MDU needed waivers from 23 homeowners and two businesses for the project. At the time of the hearing, only one waiver request was outstanding for a homeowner on 38th Street between Highway 1806 and Heskett Station. The company has not been able to secure this remaining waiver. So they, in order to proceed on their construction schedule, they decided to change their plans and reroute the pipeline slightly in order that the pipeline falls outside the 500-foot avoidance requirement that would require them to get the waiver. The residence in question is 491 feet from the original proposed route, so this route deviation is not very significant, just less than 10 feet or so. By proposing this slight reroute in the they can proceed without needing a waiver from the homeowner and keep the project on schedule. Staff has determined that this is a prudent way to go and recommends that we determine that the a new hearing is not required.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just a couple things, Darrell. The which I think gets challenging to understand sometimes in the PSC is what our jurisdiction is in certain projects, even more so about, you know, what would cause a adjustment that a landowner wants to what might end up in a court, and the laws are all different. If it's a transmission line, the transmission lines will get cited by the commission, and there's a process they go through and get their easements, and if they don't get the easements they want, they can go through a court procedure to request that land. But for pipelines and wind farms, if you don't have a willing landowner, it's almost impossible to put those facilities on that land. And I agree with that because they're different types of facilities. But in this particular case, I think the company made the right choice that they just said, we're going to make the deviation to go around this landowner that doesn't want it there, and it's the right call. But it does sometimes send confusing messages to the different groups that have infrastructure going on their property, how sometimes the company will make an adjustment for one case and they won't in the other. So it gets a little bit tricky back and forth. I think as we go forward in all these cases, we actually had one of the items on consent that there was some minor modifications to a transmission line. So we always want to work with the companies as when they get out there in the ground and when they make the minor adjustments. In this case, so everything does look to be in order. And there was some questions during the hearing about why they didn't go that much farther away to start with. But there's a lot of infrastructure in the ground in that place. And this is going to, move them away from the one landowner, it's going to put them a little bit closer to some other infrastructure. And everything is fine. But that question did come out in the hearing, and we kind of anticipated this might be coming.
I'd also note that we had staff go out on site and look at it and examine. And this pipeline is going to be a good distance from those homes in that area. And there's, as you said, a lot of infrastructure in place out there already. So I think there were some extenuating circumstances with this particular homeowner that the company just felt it best to change their plans and move forward.
I'd even go one step farther. The one thing that when the commission cites things, we follow the 500-foot setback. But once the pipeline is cited, someone could put a house 100 feet away from the pipeline. There's a limit there that they have their easement on. But in different parts of the country, you've seen where infrastructure is put into place, but people literally build right on top of it at a later date. So just one of those things to be aware of.
Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. Anything else, Commissioner?
That's it for my portfolio.
That's it. Okay. A couple items, I guess, coming up this afternoon. We've got a pretty busy afternoon. We have an informal hearing with Nexus requesting ETC status. We're going to have a work session on finalizing our bonuses for staff, salaries, followed up by a special commission meeting to get all those things put into place by 1 July so we can finalize what our budget's going to look like. Next week we have, let's see here. Well, we got a variety of things. You can look at the schedule coming up. The big one, we've got a Courtenay Wind Farm hearing coming up. Commissioner Fedorchuk is going to be leading a NARUC cybersecurity training session. So a lot of different things going on. I did want to add just a couple more thoughts about NARUC, the MARC convention, if I could. When I went down there, I was fortunate enough to chair a panel on damage prevention that we wanted to collect different folks from around the country. And there was myself, and there was a Mr. Masood Tahamatani. He's the director of utility, railroad safety, and pipeline safety with the Virginia State Corporation Commission. He's kind of like the guru in pipeline safety. They've had some significant incidences out in Virginia that really resulted in their program kind of being the Cadillac around the country. And so he presented what they've done there. Their staff is very robust. They've got probably 20 people. Their whole world is damage prevention. We heard from Mr. Doug Whitefoot. He's a senior VP from Operation Source Gas, what the companies do. And really what we heard from them is very similar to what the companies in North Dakota are doing, whether it's MDU or Alliance or Otter Tail. I think our companies are right on the mark. And then we heard from Randy Robinson. He's a directional driller out in Minnesota. And his perspective was very interesting. He talked a lot about, you know, what they do and how they do call before you dig. But he said basically the biggest problem they have is just the training of the locators and the operators. So it was very, very – Randy was there. It was a very short brief he had, but it did kind of come back to – it does come back to a training piece. If you've got good locators and good operators, you're probably not going to have the problem. So it does reinforce to me as we go to some of these meetings that, you know, it's so hard to get employees to do things for lots of things because we're just short of employees, that's a big piece we want to look at. And the big thing I picked up from the director in Virginia was they're a corporate commission, so they focus less on the fines than I think we've gone down the road. We've tried to increase the fines to deter people. They have the ability to go after license, so they really don't look at fines hardly at all. They go after their license. If they have problems with somebody, they actually issue out some of the license, so they take them. So maybe that's something that I think we might need to talk about as a commission. We've kind of gone down the road of increasing fines as a deterrent. I think that was the right idea. But the next step is if we still have companies like we have one now that's been in front of us three times, maybe we do become more aggressive at going after their license because he's found that to be much more successful than finding people because the dollar amounts at play just don't seem to deter some of these companies. So that's my opining from Mark. And I also have if schedule holds, everything goes well, North Dakota is going to host the MARC convention June of 2016. So that'll work out really well for the commission. Everybody's excited to see what's going on up here. A little bit extra work for staff, but it'll be good because then we'll get to control the agenda, what's presented at the conference, and introduce folks to what's going on in North Dakota. So that's what I would have.
Does the Virginia Commission provide the license to begin with, or do they go after it?
They do since they're the Virginia Corporation Commission. Oh. Some of these states have corporate commissions, so they actually have it all in-house. Mm-hmm. So it's much easier for them to do that. But I know that we've talked with our legal staff about that next step, so I think we should become more aggressive because, in his experience, that was the best way to really deter some of the bad actors, which makes sense. Okay, anything else, Commissioners?
I have nothing more to add.
We do have an executive session this afternoon. Thank you, Esther. That's going to be immediately following our special meeting. We have an executive session to talk about Anderson Seeds. Commissioner Crispin, as a portfolio holder, was out and had a meeting with them, and he'll be sharing his thoughts with that during the executive session, I understand. So, Commissioner, anything else?
Nothing.
Okay. Dave, any questions for us?
I guess.
And Nick?
Yeah, if you're talking about doing something like that, pulling people's licenses, I assume you have to work with the Attorney General and the Secretary of State.
Absolutely.
The Secretary of State, of course, will issue the licenses.
One of the things that we've started down the road, Alana started it before the session, and Ryan is kind of following through with it on, is that, you know, basically for their license to be renewed, they have to be the companies have to be in good standing with the Secretary of State. So if they have a case pending in front of us that hasn't been resolved, that might be the not in good standing. So we just haven't been able to kind of close that loop up. But that's one of Ryan's tasks as well as many other things.
The one area where we do license is in the area of grain elevators, so, and so that's a tool.
An auctioneer's
tool that we, you know, could look at using, and I think the commission has in the past looked at in terms of when you renew a license, what kind of standing is the elevator in. If there's any trouble, that would be another potential tool to bring people back in line.
Now, about this idea that there's some kind of, you know, sharing of profit with utilities, you do have an agreement with them. Do you? You have one with Xcel, too, correct?
I believe we have one with Otter Tail, but not Xcel.
No, it's Otter Tail. Are you?
But Xcel's in a rate case right now that I suspect that'd be something that I would look at very closely.
That's what I'm. So Xcel, possibly you'll encourage the company to look at something like that.
I would never want to make a decision before the case is finalized, Dave, but I think the commission should be consistent in what we've done before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in terms of just off the hand, how many of these service area agreements are there now?
I think we're up to 16 or 17. I think it's 16.
And does Boomerang actually operate in North Dakota?
They do not have a storefront in North Dakota. They're following the model of the other ATCs that just have storefronts somewhere else, but they want to provide the services. So I'm anticipating much more discussion on this ATC approval or disapproval than there has been in the past.
So is that a case of what goes around comes around?
I think that would be an accurate statement.
You know what I had to say. That's what I got.
All right. Nick, do you have anything from the Bismarck Tribune?
You pretty much covered all what I had.
All right, fair enough.
Thanks for coming.
Okay, anything else going once, going twice? We got a pretty lengthy admin agenda, so let's we'll reconvene at 11 o'clock, and we'll sign orders in the interim. So we'll close the regular scheduled meeting. Thank you.